Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
This has been the most challenging legislative session that I've ever experienced for many reasons, for the board of contempt vote, what's the sideshow with the audit, and just making sure that we pass a fiscally responsible budget that will grow the economy. I mean, it's been difficult.
I believe that that's going to intimidate voters. I can't imagine having a knock on my door from law enforcement related to my vote. And that is what could happen if SB 1241 passes.
Just because the ballot is not counted doesn't mean the person didn't attempt to illegally vote and doesn't mean the person didn't commit felony forgery.
Hi, I'm Chris Mays. Growing up in Arizona, I learned about hard work and playing fair. My mom was a teacher and my dad was a pharmacist. They raised three kids and ran a tree farm in their spare time. I was taught to look out for family and for the people in our community. That's why I've decided to run for Arizona Attorney General.
And with us to talk about the latest entrance in the race to become Arizona's next Attorney General and Secretary of State, the budget process and the continuing legislative session and more are Julie Earfley of Earfley Uncuffed. Julie, good morning.
Good morning.
And Matthew Benson of Veritas. Matt, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Julie, let me start with you. There's obviously a lot of tension still happening down at the Capitol related to the legislative session and budget passage and whatnot. I don't want to be too generic, but I really just want to get your general observations about what has happened over the last, let's say, 24 to 48 hours down there.
Huh.
Loaded question, I guess, based on that laugh. Yeah.
I think, you know, what I have noticed over the course of the last couple of days, I don't think I've ever seen our educators more upset, and for good reason. And this budget is like a bold screw to the education community. This is really, you know, for years, those in the education community, those that have working to try and get back the cuts that were made, those very deep cuts during the Great Recession, they hold over and over again, gee, we'd love to help you, but our hands are tied. We just don't have enough money. You know, we know that we fund special education, hundreds of millions of per year. We know that we have some of the lowest paid teachers in the nation. We know that we have the most overcrowded classrooms in the nation. There's a teacher short crisis. There's a $2 billion lawsuit.
Pardon me, I'm going to jump in for a sec because the connection is not good. I'm going to have our engineer fix that, but we'll be right back with you in a sec. We will pick it up where it left off. So Matt, let me go to you on this one then. Basically, obviously Julie expresses the concerns of a certain number of educators depending on how things go. Earlier in what we call our billboard, we heard John Kavanaugh has said certain things, saying, well, this is to a point of saying, you know, some of the priorities were there. There was additional spending. Give me your general observations. It doesn't have to be about the budget specifically, but just what we've seen go on over the last couple of days down at the Capitol.
I think what you've seen is Republicans rally together and rally around Governor Ducey and push through what is the largest tax cut in state history that's going to benefit every Arizona family. You know, it includes over $6 billion in funding for K-12 schools in this state. So it is a significant increase in public education, both at the K-12 and higher education level, and truly historic investments in things like, you know, water infrastructure and transportation and the other things that we consider core critical services in this state. Now, unfortunately, not a lot of people are talking about that stuff because the focus has been on other issues that are frankly minutia that don't impact the lives of Arizona families to the degree that having a great school, having access to a stable water supply, and having a good transportation system and public safety do. But those are the things that I think are going to have lasting impacts for the state.
Matt, what do you make of the fact that the governor and GOP leaders had to scale down somewhat, at least initially, this flat income tax and maybe phase it in over a longer period of time? And there's some triggers in there so that if the economy isn't growing as robustly as they hope and expect it will, that, you know, the cuts won't take effect immediately. What do you make of that move?
I think that through the course of this process, the the tax cut and the overall budget have gotten stronger. And I'll tell you why I say that. Through the course of these negotiations with Republican legislators, because, of course, you know, Democrats declared early on that they were off the budget and just frankly weren't a part of the process because they sidelined themselves. And that's unfortunate. But Republicans negotiated this amongst themselves and came up with a plan that, you know, it buys down $1 billion in state debt and pension liabilities. That's a significant improvement in the budget that's going to help the state long term. So I feel like where we've ended up is better than where we started.
Was there an argument to be made, Democrats and some others made it, that maybe this is the time for one-time rebates and then, you know, maybe making some investments? You mentioned some of the things that the state and the budget are going to be spending money on, but clearly there are more needs in the state than what this budget did or maybe even was able to cover. Would it have been a better approach to maybe send residents a check this one time and set some maybe more money for debt reduction, more money for other kinds of needs aside? And then, you know, if the economy continues to grow, then maybe, you know, look at more of a permanent reduction down the road.
You know, that'd be great. But unfortunately, employers and prospective businesses looking on where to locate and where to add don't make those investments without stability and something they can count on, and rebates that may occur this year and not occur next year don't provide the confidence that they need to make those investments. So, you know, with this tax plan, and look, I get it. There's a lot of sky is falling rhetoric coming from the left right now. But I want to remind everyone that with this tax cut, we cap the top income tax rate at 4.5% for the highest earners in Arizona, which is essentially the same top rate in deep blue, my home state, I know it well, Colorado. And last I looked, Colorado was doing okay, and the sky is still where it needs to be. So, you know, it's just a reminder, I think, that what this income tax package will do is ensure we remain competitive with the Colorados of the world and whatnot. Where we would have ended up without this tax plan is with an income tax system on par with California and Vermont and New Jersey and a bunch of states that frankly are not considered competitive from a tax perspective.
And Julie Earfley has returned. Julie may have missed a bit of it, but one thing I want to have you specifically address, and then we'll give you a chance to talk a little bit more, is Matt mentioned that at the beginning of the legislative session, Democrats sort of checked themselves out of budget talks, and I think people were optimistic going in thinking, well, there's just that one vote margin. We may in fact see some compromise. I presume your take is different on that. The Democrats were sort of left out of the process.
They were completely left out. I mean, I don't, you can't compromise if you have an entire caucus, the Republican caucus, that won't allow them into the debate. And I think what you've seen in the last couple of days is Republicans aren't just debating the budget. They're throwing in a whole bunch of other policies that have absolutely nothing to do with the budget. They're throwing in stuff that died in committee that was already voted down, but they're bringing it back up. So, yeah, it's really sad to see what's going on down there. If I could, if my connection is good right now.
Please, absolutely.
I'd like to go back a little bit to, I heard just the tail end of what Matt said. I'm sure you're shocked that I disagree, but I'm not the only one that disagrees. Arizona state economists disagree. The former governor of Arizona disagrees. You know, Jan Brewer, she said, like, this is not a good move. This is very disastrous for our state. We cannot assume that these kinds of surpluses are just going to last into infinity. They're not. And that's why people have been sounding the alarm. From an education standpoint, we have all of these unpaid bills that we're ignoring, right? We have a $2 billion lawsuit against the state for unpaid school construction costs and repairs. Basically, the legislature is saying, we don't care. We're not going to fund that. We're going to wait until that lawsuit comes to fruition, and we're going to be forced to pay it. And then what are we going to do? We're going to have to cut elsewhere in order to pay it. That's just ridiculous. So we're putting everything in a, you know, this was just, it was a very reckless budget. And if there were folks beyond Republican lawmakers and Governor Ducey that agreed with it, I think they would speak up. They really don't. It's really just the folks at the tippity top who are getting the $300,000 tax cut versus the $3 tax cut that working families are getting that are excited about this.
Julie, let me jump in on that. Just ask you one follow-up, because Mark and Matt were talking a bit about the initial flat tax and that it was reduced a bit in terms of the impact at this point. Considering the idea that tax cuts are considered to be a positive thing, certainly on the right, and there are a lot of people on the left who think, yes, I'd like to pay less in taxes. Do you think there would have been a reasonable tax cut proposal here that would have made sense from your perspective, considering the surplus and considering other things, or would you have rather seen the process go a different direction completely?
I think the process needed to go a different direction because, as I said, we still have these unpaid bills that we haven't addressed. We still have, you know, almost $8 billion in, you know, in a deficit. We still have this $2 billion lawsuit that's outstanding that eventually is going to be, the state is going to be ruled against. You know, they're going to have to pay up on that eventually. We have this, you know, progress meter, and we have this commitment from so-called business leaders who said that, yes, they agree teachers need to be paid more. Yes, it's not okay that we have the most overcrowded classrooms in the nation. We had an opportunity to bring teacher pay to average. You know, we said no to that. I mean, there are just a lot of issues that we still have in this state. There are crises that have not been addressed. And all we're doing is setting ourselves up for more crises. So I just think the entire process was wrongheaded.
Matt, let me ask you about something that Julie brought up just a moment ago, which is a number of policy issues that are in the budget, some of which were in standalone bills that maybe didn't make it through those sessions, some were not. You have things like an ESA expansion, things like the teaching controversial subjects in class, mask requirements, and, you know, schools and universities can't have them, taking some election lawsuit authority away from Secretary of State Katie Hobbs. Kind of a two-part question here. Bob Robb wrote about the fact that, in his opinion at least, these would seem to violate the single subject rule for bills that is in the Constitution, but also maybe on a more philosophical level, if you can just kind of cram all this policy into the budget, like, what's the point of even having a legislative session that's more than a month? Like, why not just have a budget, put everything in it, and then be done?
Policy issues getting wrapped into the budget is not a new phenomenon. This is something that goes back, frankly, decades to Governor Napolitano and earlier. And you can argue that trend has accelerated with time, but it's certainly not a new thing. And so there's a lot in this budget. But again, I go back to the things that are going to have meaningful long-term impacts on families in this state. You know, this budget includes $1 billion in child care assistance in this state, which we know is a critical need. And we know that, you know, through the pandemic, the pandemic has truly exposed some of those issues and shortcomings. And it's going to be important to provide that child care in order to help get families and parents back to work. So when we talk about investments in this budget, I think that is a critical, meaningful investment that nobody is talking about, because we're frankly talking about a lot of politics, not just on this show, but in other settings, a lot of politics and not a lot of policy that's going to help Arizona families.
Well, Julie, at the risk of continuing that trend of just talking more politics, I'm curious because one of the other points that Bob Robb brought up is that he was frankly seemed surprised that nobody had sued over the fact that in the past, as Matt said, this is not a new phenomenon of unrelated policy ending up in the budget. Is there a movement to maybe change that this year, that maybe somebody will sue over, be it ESA expansion or something else in the budget?
Yeah, there actually is. And I'm glad that Bob Robb brought that up. I think in the past, a lot of folks have been hesitant to sue about it because lawsuits do take a long time. I mean, you know, as I alluded to earlier, the $2 billion lawsuit, you know, for unfunded school repairs, that is still going through the courts. It takes a long time to get through the courts when you sue. So obviously, that's a difficult process. I think this year that will change. Definitely the education groups who are so upset that this was essentially an end run around Prop 208, that this was really done because they were so upset that voters decided that you know, the high earners should pay their fair share. And now, of course, they're paying even less. they are upset. You know, they spent a lot of time trying to take this to voters. Voters approved it. Now they've got voters coming back, or now they've got the legislature coming back and trying to undo the will of the voters. So, yes, I think that they will potentially sue over some of this, particularly if the voucher legislation goes through.
Our guests today, Julie Earfley of Earfley Uncuffed and Matthew Benson of Veritas. Guys, just a couple more minutes to talk about legislative session, et cetera, before we get on to some other topics. But, Matt, let me ask you, when it comes down to sort of the legacy of this session, if I can put it this way, the fact that we are still at June 25th and only a week or so left to go in the fiscal year, obviously things were affected by the pandemic. As many legislative sessions as you've seen, how impactful will this one end up being, do you think, short and long term?
Well, obviously, I think we're all going to remember this session for the pandemic and the state's response to the pandemic. And fortunately, I think we're coming out the other side of this. And I think that the legislative session is really setting the foundation for the economy to recover and really kind of hit new heights as we go forward. And I think the tax cuts and the other investments we've discussed are going to be part of that. But as when we all look back and remember 2021, we're going to remember people, you know, not being able to participate in the legislative process like normal, whether they're remote or the various other mitigation measures that were in place simply because of the safety risks. At least that's what I'm going to remember.
Julie, how about you?
Well, I think this, you know, I will agree with Matt on this point. This will definitely be a legislative session to remember. I think we're going to look back on it and realize that this was a missed opportunity, a huge missed opportunity. We could have addressed some really important outstanding crises, particularly as it concerns education, and we decided against it. And we may very well bankrupt our state because of that, and we will likely be talking about these crises for the next decade to come. I think that is the lesson learned here. We had folks who were hurting from the pandemic. We decided they weren't as important to deal with, and we gave a massive tax cut to the ultra wealthy. I don't think people will forget that.
Okay, Julie, now this is the point in time where we do that radio scratch thing where we completely change topics. So let's go to some candidates who've announced that they're running. We have lawmaker Diego Rodriguez on the Democratic side running for Attorney General. The bigger name is former Corporation Commission Chair Chris Mayes. Unfortunately, we're going to lose her from the Friday newscast. So thanks, Chris, if you're listening right now. But anyway, Julie, how significant is Chris Mayes' candidacy there for Attorney General? She is an attorney. She obviously worked for the former governor and was a Corporation Commission Chair in her own right.
Right. It's very significant. She's incredibly smart, incredibly talented. She's run a statewide race before, so she knows how to do this. She has name ID. And I think, you know, just by watching that video that she launched, she knows how to communicate with people. I think she put her thumb on the issues. And that really is that we need an office that is thinking about Arizona families. That has not been what we've seen from the AG's office recently. We've had an AG that tried to overturn Obamacare, that wanted to allow other states to invalidate states' results from elections. You know, she's talking about doing the things that matter to Arizona families, and I think that will resonate, and I make my prediction, that she wins that office.
Matt, from the GOP side of things, how are the Republican candidates looking at this? I mean, it's not every day that you have a Democratic primary for a statewide office. Two candidates announcing for AG this week. How is this shaping up from the Republican side, looking at the Democratic primary, do you think?
Well, I'll just point out, in terms of the Democratic primary, you do have Chris Mayes, who has the attributes being elected statewide and having that background. She'll be up against a state legislator, Diego Rodriguez, who's a former Pima County prosecutor. And I think it illustrates the vulnerability that Chris Mayes has because she doesn't have that prosecutorial experience that I think voters, for right or wrong, look for in their attorney general. And on the Republican side, you've got several candidates who are very focused on the law enforcement, the prosecutorial, and in particular, the border security and illegal immigration aspects of this job. I mean, Lacey Cooper, just to take one, as a former Border Patrol section chief and U.S. attorney, what I think is going to be the kind of experience that Arizonans are looking for in a year when the border is really the top issue that I think is going to dominate that campaign.
Matt, do you get the sense that the GOP primary field is set for AG at this point, or do you expect more candidates to jump in?
I've got no idea. You've got a few at this point, but I mean, I keep reminding people it's June 2021. I mean, the election is a lifetime away, so certainly you might see others jump in.
Julie, I want to jump to a Republican candidate, just give you a chance to weigh in on this one, because Shauna Bolick, Representative Shauna Bolick, has announced she's running for Secretary of State. And we've seen some what seems like a pretty conservative batch of candidates on the GOP side for Secretary of State, with Michelle Eugenti-Rita and Mark Fincham as well. Before we get Matt's take on from the GOP side, from the Democratic side, when you see that, what sort of message does that send, those particular candidates that are running so far for Secretary of State?
Well, I think it's a very clear message for those who are Republicans. They have been working this last legislative session and even before that to really take power away from the people, to make it harder to vote, to overturn the wishes of the people by taking powers away from an elected Secretary of State, by doing what they can to not fund Prop 208. You know, they've really gone sort of above and beyond to not listen to the voters. On the Democratic side, you have the opposite. You have folks who have worked really hard to expand voting rights, to make it easier to vote for people, you know, make it easier for people to exercise that right. And so I think that's where there will be a very clear line. You know, Shauna Bolick, who recently announced, she actually ran a bill to take power away from the voters to allow the legislature to not certify or to basically uncertify the presidential election. So if the legislature was unhappy with who the voters had chose, that would allow them to pick somebody else. I don't think voters want that. I think they prefer direct democracy. I think that, you know, when they say this is what majority is, that's what they want to happen. So I think there is a very clear line between the folks who are running on the Republican side and the Democratic side.
Matt, taking into account what you said about it being June 2021, let's look at those specific Republican candidates, though it seems like all of them would be folks who are very much about election reforms. In the case of Fincham, for sure, Mark Fincham, for sure, there is the advocacy related to what happened on January 6th, and also really making some dramatic shifts, also support of the audit ongoing right now. Does that tell you, even in June of 2021, that the audit and making dramatic changes is going to be a major focus of the Republican primary?
Well, I don't know about dramatic changes, but there's no doubt election integrity is one of the most animating issues among the Republican base. And you're seeing that reflected in some of the candidates for Secretary of State. It is worth remembering Arizona has some of the most accessible elections in the country with our extended early voting and mail-in ballots. You know, you don't need a reason to request a mail-in, and of course, Election Day itself. And I think you're going to see that we remain one of the most accessible, ballots in the country. But what you're seeing on the right, and from some of these candidates in particular, is a call for, are there things we need to do to make sure the system is as secure as it needs to be? Are there reforms that we can have to tighten up the process to ensure that there's not fraud? And, you know, these things are certainly worth considering. But, you know, election integrity, that issue is not going away. That is going to be a massive issue in 2022.
So, Julie, on the issue of election integrity, how big of an issue do you expect the audit, or whatever you want to call it, to be? And do you get the sense that it is something that Democrats will try to make more of a campaign issue if it is not naturally one at that time?
Definitely. The audit is a joke, and it's not an audit. Really, it's a partisan recount. That's what it is. And it's a partisan recount by a bunch of people who aren't even qualified to do a partisan recount. And it's just, as more and more information comes out about this partisan recount, we're finding more and more reasons to scoff at it, to really just shake our heads and go, what is going on here? And the fact that you have other states coming in and thinking that they want to amplify something like this is going to continue to be an issue. And I think Democrats should hold it up. I think they should say, listen, look at what Republicans have started here. They don't like what you guys chose, voters, they don't like majority rule, so they're going to try and overturn your vote. We see that with the Secretary of State candidates. We see that, you know, with what's happening in the Arizona Senate with Karen Fann. It's very concerning, and I think Democrats would be wise to continue to talk about it, to continue to point it out, because we are talking about a breakdown in democracy. This is a huge concern. This, I don't know what the end result is, but it's not good.
Matt, back to your calendar issue, which is that it is June of 2021, and the primary is more than a year from now. How influential do you think the audit and the results and anything that might come from it legislative-wise will be in the primary and maybe leading into the general election next year?
I think that's going to depend in part on what the results of that audit are and what the legislature and other public bodies choose to do in response. So it's hard to say. Certainly in an off year and summer of an off year when, you know, let's say a slow news cycle, the audit has sucked a lot of the oxygen out of the room. But whether that continues to be the dominating factor going into 2022, I don't know. I don't necessarily expect that to be the case. How long is the news cycle these days? You know, it's about 60 seconds long, and then people move on to something else. So I don't think we can expect that the Maricopa County audit is going to be top of mind over a year from now.
Julie, briefly, you agree or disagree with Matt on that?
I disagree. I think Democrats will do everything they can to keep it top of mind because it falls in line with so much of what's happening down at the legislature, which is to really shrink democracy and to go, you know, move more towards an authoritarian state. And that's just not okay. So I think the expansion of democracy and saving our democracy in general will be a huge issue going into the 2022 elections.
And less than a minute to go, dramatic shift in topic again. Julie, we were hoping for Suns in four. That clearly can't happen after losing last night. So is it now Suns in five, Suns in six, Suns in seven against the Clippers? What are your thoughts?
Suns in five, definitely.
Okay. Matt, your thoughts on that?
I think it's going to go all the way, Suns in seven.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll have to tweet about that and figure out what happens. Matthew Benson of Veritas, Julie Earfley of Earfley Uncuffed. Guys, thanks as always. Take care.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.